You've heard in the announcements, today is a day that we have a very special teen Bible study that will involve our senior citizens, hopefully participating in what part of it will be a Q&A session with our teens. Again, I trust that our senior members here, and I'm not defining who you are, but our senior members will attend along with our teens, our younger young adults, anyone who would like to attend. You can probably tell that it's a little bit important to me. I believe this session is so valuable that I have decided to give an entire sermon surrounding it and answering the question, why? Why are we doing this? What's so special about that? What's so special about this particular teen Bible study? And why should we have this as a topic of the sermon today, of all things? There's a song that we sing. It's from Psalm 127 and verse 3. It says that children are the gift of God. Now, do we believe that? A gift from God. If we received a gift from God, how much should we treasure that gift? We really believe that God has given us something as a gift. And we deeply love our children. That's an understatement. We, of course, want the best for them. Okay, stop right there. What is that? If we want the best for our children, what is the best for our children? Well, we think about that. Well, one thing, if you had to narrow it down to just one thing, what one thing would you consider to be the most valuable possession for your children to have? If you had to say, well, they can have one thing, what would that be? We name a lot of things. Well, I'm going to try to answer that for you, and I will say that I believe the most valuable possession that our children can have is similar to what Solomon asked for, wisdom or knowledge, particularly knowledge of God's truth. Not only knowledge of God's truth, but a deep love for it. A deep love for God's truth. If that's the case, if we would agree with that, then, oh, that's the best thing. You're right. That's the best thing that I would want my child to have. How are we going to help provide that for them? How do we give that gift to our children? Well, I believe the best way, or one of the best ways, is by you as the parent displaying that to them, displaying a knowledge of God's truth. But more than that, not only just having a knowledge of God's truth, but that you also have a love, a deep love for God's truth, and your children see that. They see you having a love for God's ways, and that's what they grow up with in their home. A parent, at least one parent, having a love for God's way of life. Now, as the parents, you provide that at home. Hopefully that you do. But we're not all parents of children here, at least parents of children here in the church. So as the congregation of members of the Church of God, we together, as a group, we together can also provide that for the children who observe us. Oh, and yes, our children do see us. They know who we are. Do our children see that regularly in the members of the congregation here? Do our children here, who are part of this Raleigh congregation, do they see adult men and women who know God's truth and who they can see by your actions, they know that you have a love for God's truth, His way of life? Now, I wrote about this for something that may be on Life Open Truth, I don't know. But our children are very observant. They watch, they see, and they can spot hypocrisy in a moment. Now, what do our children think of the other members of the congregation here? Oh, that's a good question to ask them. Have you ever asked them? Do your children, now parents, I can speak to this to you directly. Do your children know all the members of the congregation here? Now, I would say, for the most part, they probably do. But maybe even a more important question to ask, do all the members of the congregation here know your children? some to a lesser degree or more than others. We do. We say, oh, I know that you, well, at least I know who you belong to. We may not know what grade they're in or what their favorite subjects are, things about that. But I think you're seeing the point that I'm trying to get across, is that we can do better. I don't believe that our generations are bonding and binding together quite as much as they probably could. Now, yes, there's some exceptions to that, but what I'm asking is, we say that we are the family, a church family. Are we a family? And do we act like a family? Are our seniors, because we're a family, does that mean then our seniors are like grandparents to the children? And seniors, do you treat the kids that are here as if they were your own grandchildren? Is there that love for them? I have kind of got into a pattern of quoting from Life, Hope, and Truth, and so I'm not going to stop now. So, from Life, Hope, and Truth, quote, one of the biggest benefits of living many years is one that so many in our culture today overlook or dismiss. It's the wisdom that comes from so much experience in life. As the old adage says, we need to learn from the mistakes of others because we can't possibly live long enough to make them all ourselves. So with age comes wisdom and understanding to pass along to our children, to grandchildren, and to great-grandchildren, if only they will have the wisdom to stop and listen. Also, with those years of experience comes a new level of learning, or at least it should. There is a lot of valuable gold from experience that comes with the silver in the hair. That's the end of the quote. All right, so let's ask another question in light of that. Do our senior citizens here have the opportunity to do what we've talked about there in that quote from Life, Hope, and Truth? Do they have the opportunity to pass along wisdom and understanding to our youth here, to our young people here, to their spiritual children, their spiritual grandchildren? And do our children today take advantage of stopping to sit down and listen to the wisdom and the understanding, the advice of our seniors that are here? Do you realize how precious that is? I hope that many have done so. What I will say is that we're going to make more such opportunities available beginning today with our very special Bible study after services. All right, well, is this just something nice we can do for the seniors and the children? And that's a nice idea, Mr. Kelly. Okay, but you know, there's probably more important things. Or, wait, is there really biblical instruction about this topic? About our responsibility to do this? What does the Bible say about teaching our children? Why are we having a sermon on this topic? Come with me to Genesis 18 as we answer that question. Genesis 18. We'll talk about Abraham for just a moment here. In verse 19, we're going to notice how God praised Abraham for his determination to teach true godly values to his children. Not only to his children, as we'll see. Genesis 18, verse 19. God says, "For I know him." What a great thing to be said about you, that God would say, "For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him. And they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment." That's pretty amazing. Now, it says that he will command his children. That sounds pretty rough, doesn't it? Well, the word command means to lay charge upon. It's like, I charge you to do this. Or to instruct them. Or to set them in order. I will instruct and set in order my children with this charge that I lay upon them, that I command them, it says. So Abraham instructed the children of his household. He set them in order so that they would keep the way of the Lord. And God said, "I knew that. I just knew that. I knew Abraham was going to do that." But notice who is Abraham giving this instruction to? Yeah, his children, his grandchildren, right? More. It wasn't only to his children, it was to his household after him. Now remember how things were. They were kind of nomadic tribes back there. They wandered and the family was very important. And there were people who were attached to the family. Okay? I believe that includes a lot of young people who comprised the entire entourage of Abraham and everything he had. He's a wealthy man. Came to be. So it says Abraham is going to teach them. Any who would sit and listen, and I suspect if Abraham said, we're having Bible study, they would be there. You know, they were going to listen to Abraham, to Father Abraham. So, should we follow the example of Abraham, the father of the faithful, that he's called, a friend of God? Can God say he knows that we will also instruct our children and our children who are of the household? We are the household of faith. Do we instruct the children of our household? About Abraham, God said, well, I know that. I know he'll do that. Great example. Let's notice another example. This one is in the book of Job. Of course, you know the story, how Job went through his crisis and why, oh, why is this happening? And all the guys sat around and the older men were trying to talk to Job and tell him what he had done wrong. But we have Elihu. He was a little bit younger. Don't know exactly the age, but I don't know, perhaps in his 20s, what we might say a young adult. Job 32 and verse 6. He was quiet for a while, but Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite, answered and said, I am young in years. You are very old. How old was very old? I don't know. Of course, maybe some of them lived a long time. Maybe they were 100 years old. I don't know. But he says, I was afraid, therefore, and I dared not declare my opinion to you. I said, age should speak, and a multitude of years should teach wisdom. Now, isn't that odd? We don't have that much today. Do our young people today have that kind of respect for the elderly so that they would say, you are so wise. You have so much understanding. I wouldn't even dare speak. You know far more than I know. Our young people don't say that about the older folks today, do they? Our youth often think the elderly are hopelessly naive, hopelessly out of touch with what is going on. I mean, after all, the elderly don't even know what an iPad is, and I talk about always carrying my iPad with me all the time, you know, so I know what an iPad is. Now, technology, it does pass us by, but it doesn't mean all the wisdom and things we have to offer is passed by. No, they have much to offer. And our youth should have this attitude towards their elders. Like what Elihu said here, age should speak. Age should teach us wisdom. And then the obvious result of that is that the children should listen. And not only listen to what the elders say, but pay attention to it. But do what they say. Rather than, I don't have to listen to that. That's crazy. Now that they would listen and heed the wise advice that they'll hear from their elders. What about the New Testament? What example did the early New Testament church give the ministry in regards to elderly men and women of the congregation passing along knowledge and wisdom to the younger generations who would follow them? I think we do have biblical precedent for what we're doing today. Let's go to Titus chapter 2. Titus chapter 2. Paul gave instructions to Titus about roles that he should set up or he should establish for the church members in his congregation. So he said in Titus 2 verse 1, but as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine. Now that's what his role was as the pastor, things that are proper for sound doctrine. And here's part of what he is to establish then, that the older men, that they are sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love, and in patience. That should describe the men of our congregation, the elderly men of our congregation. And it does. That's what they have to pass along. And verse 3, the older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, and teachers of good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands and to love their children. Here's what else they teach: to be discreet, to be chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. So certainly we see here that the older men and women are to set an example in the congregations by their conduct. But not only set the example by their conduct, but the women especially, of all things. You think, well, women are to teach. Oh, yes, they are, in this way, in this format. The women are to teach them good things. Perhaps it was a given that the men would be teaching, maybe during, you know, in the Sabbath services or whatever, sitting at the gate, that the men would teach. But it was also told that in the right environment, the women were to teach the younger as well. Notice the importance, though, of the Christian values that were to be passed down to the children, to the young people. The older generation was to pass down sound doctrine. Well, when have you ever sat down with one of the young people and started talking to them about doctrine and the beliefs of what the church believes? What are the fundamental beliefs? What about faith? Examples of faith? Good things. Well, that's pretty general. How about this one, though? Teaching how to have a happy marriage. Some of our seniors have been happily married for 30, 40, 50 plus years. My mom and dad about to do this year be 65 years they've been married. What a great example. Teach them how to have a happy family life. Today, in our modern society, that kind of teaching just doesn't happen, does it? Does that happen? Do you see examples of that? No, the elderly are ignored. The elderly are considered irrelevant to the youth for the most part. Now, that shouldn't be the case in the Church of God. That shouldn't be. It shouldn't be in the homes or of the members of the Church of God. Do we agree with that? All right. Let's say, yep, you're right. I agree with that. What are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? Well, I will tell you, we're going to facilitate that dialogue between our elderly and our youth. The youth to the elderly. And we are beginning today. We're going to fulfill that responsibility. Because, notice again, if we look at this verse, notice what happens if we fail to fulfill this responsibility that's given here in Titus. It says that if this is not done, it results in the word of God being blasphemed. Well, other meanings of that word blasphemed means that the word of God would be dishonored. Or that we would hurl abuse at the Word of God. It would be maligned, reviled, slandered, spoken against the Word of God if we fail to do these things. So clearly God takes this responsibility seriously, as I believe we should and we will. We cannot dishonor the Word of God by failing to teach our children the values and principles of God by our example and by our words, our teaching. Now, we often see that ancient Israel, the Old Testament, is referred to as the Church of God in the wilderness. Remember that terminology, the Church of God? They were God's chosen people, the song that we sing. We are God's people. God was working with them, guiding and directing them to a destination. He was working with them. He was going to bring the ancient Israelites to the promised land. Right? That was their goal. Well, they are a type of our journey today. So many things, it says in Corinthians, that they were written for our admonition on whom the ends of the age have come. So we're to learn from that. There are so many analogies, the Old Testament, that's typed for us today to learn from. And that, I believe, includes what we're talking about today. So let's go to Deuteronomy and review the instructions that God gave to the Israelites about their responsibility towards children in regards to the law of God. Perhaps you would first think of these scriptures in Deuteronomy, beginning in chapter 4. When you think of this subject, Deuteronomy chapter 4, and we'll start in verse 7. For what great nation is there that has God so near to it? You could say the same thing. What great a people, a congregation, even right here, that has God so close to it? God is here. We ask for God's presence in the opening prayer, don't we? He is here. What great church is that has God so near to it as the Lord our God is to us? For whatever reason, we may call upon Him. See, the same thing. That was what He had with ancient Israel. That's certainly what He has for us today. Let's go to verse 8. And what great nation is there that has such statutes and righteous judgments as are in all this law which I've set before you this day? It's a tremendous law. So much benefit to it. And verse 9, so only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself lest you forget. Lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. Teach them to your children and to your grandchildren. Especially teach them concerning the day you stood before the Lord your God in Horeb. Remember Mount Sinai? Teach them about what that was like. When the Lord said to me, gather the people to me and I will let them hear my words and that they may learn to fear me all the days that they live on the earth, that they may teach their children. That's amazing, isn't it? But did you notice why? Why is that there? Why do we read that? Why were they to teach? Why was it so important that they diligently teach the children and the grandchildren? Because it said if they did not, the children would tend to forget the things that they had seen. And they will forget. And human beings are the same. Today, we forget. They would tend to forget the things they had seen, and God's law would depart from their heart. And I know that that happens, and you know it too, because you've seen it happen. We all, if we have a history that goes back 30 years or more, we've seen people where the law of God departs from their heart. So we consider this, though. Who's hearing this? The adults who lived in Egypt under the slavery of Pharaoh. What we see in the movies, you know. What we read about. The Israelites who had seen and experienced to some degree that the plagues, at least knew they were happening to the Egyptians. They saw that death angel go by. They took of that Passover. They helped smear the blood over the doorpost. And they were afraid. They could hear the shrieks and the screams outside their door. The firstborn of the Egyptians were dying. They had light when all around them it was darkness. They saw those things. They saw Moses stand up there at the sea with Pharaoh's army back behind him, the mountains. We're going to die. They saw what we only see in our mind's eye or what Hollywood can depict for us. Moses standing up there with the rod, the staff, and somehow the wind comes and the Red Sea parts. The roar of that, they witnessed that. They saw that. They crossed through. Looking up, the fish plopping out, you know. And they got to the other side. And they saw the sea come back together and crush and drown Pharaoh's army. They saw water, fresh water coming out of the rock. They saw manna on the ground. What is it? It's manna. That was its name. What is it? It was good to eat. They saw the cloud of fire, the pillar of fire. They witnessed the glory of God on Mount Sinai. As we refer to here, you stood before the Lord your God in Horeb. Let them hear my words. Remember how powerful that was? The noise, the quake, the lightning and thunder. And they were so afraid and said, don't speak to us. We're too afraid. They witnessed all that. These people all died in the wilderness along the way if they were age 20 years old or older. The young people who were under 20 years old were the ones who entered the promised land some 40 years later. To that first generation who were to enter the promised land, 40 years have passed. A long time. For us, that was 1975. That was some of us when we were in the church in the 1960s. The booklet, 1975 in Prophecy. That was so far in the future. Now it's 40 years in the past. Just like for them. So these young people, they were anxious to enter this incredibly wonderful new land, this promised land with all of its wonders. And it was going to be very easy for them to be distracted by the glamour of this new land that they were about to enter. They had heard stories about it. Remember, the stories of the spies had been some time ago, but they were really looking forward to going into this new land flowing with milk and honey. Very easy for them to forget the things that they had seen in that wilderness for so many years have gone by. And you see nothing but sand and rocks and lizards and dust. It would be very easy for the law of God to depart from their heart as they are now exposed to this flashy new land. These appealing gods. Oh, I've never heard of you before. The false gods of the strange people of this new land. Well, can't we just check out what they believe? That looks pretty cool to me. What can it hurt? Looks like so much fun worshiping before this Dagon thing. Wow, what a blast that'll be. God knew it would be easy for them to be drawn away by their own lust and enticed into following false gods. Oh, and the young ladies, wow, they were pretty beautiful. The guys, you know, and probably the other way around too. The young ladies probably thought the guys in the new land were pretty tough. Whatever the word you would use to describe them. And that's why God kept saying to the elders, gather your children around. Teach them diligently. Let them hear my words so that they will learn to fear me and that they will obey me all their lives. And God repeats things that He wants us to remember. Things that are incredibly important, He will repeat them over and over. So Deuteronomy 4, we had it, but look at Deuteronomy 6. You think God doesn't know human nature? What we tend to do? Look at Deuteronomy 6, verse 6. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You think the Old Testament wasn't something of spiritual nature? It was just all been black and white on paper? No, God said these words need to be in your heart. And you shall teach them diligently to your children. And you shall talk about them when you sit in your house. When you go for a walk. When you go to bed at night. When you rise up in the morning. You talk about them. Chapter 11, verse 19. Basically the same words. You shall teach them to your children, speaking of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. So this instruction here is repeated now three times from chapter 4 through chapter 11. But notice that we're told that if you are going to teach it, if you're going to talk about it, what was the first instruction? What was the first part of the instruction? These words shall be in your heart. You've got to live it, not just know it. How are you going to teach something if you don't believe it and live it? From the very depths of your being, that you will always do this. Young people, that's what our seniors here have done. They're still here. Some of our seniors have lived God's way of life for over 40 years. Some, in some congregations, maybe over 60 years. 70 years? Trust me, young people. It's in their hearts. Or they wouldn't be here. And trust me about this. They want it to be in your heart too. You can ask them after church. They want to tell you what it was like in 1975, 1965. What it was like when the congregations, we had, what, how many people were in the congregation? You talked about a Fayetteville congregation starting, and then Raleigh, how many were here? 500? 400 people? How many people in all of North Carolina, let's say in 1980, how many people attended church services? Probably more people than in the eastern half of the United States now. What was it like back then? What was it like to go to the Feast of Tabernacles in a tent with 12,000 people and the wind blowing? What was it like back then? What was it like to have a magazine that had 7 or 8 million people subscribing to it? What was it like to see Mr. Armstrong on the television every week or on the radio 4 or 5 times a day? What was it like? What was Ambassador College like? Mr. Braswell can tell you about that and some others. King David could speak to the children of his kingdom anytime he wanted to, couldn't he? He could have messages written out that would be sent out and required for all the Israelite families to read. Psalm 34 records one of those letters, one of those messages that King David sent out to all the people to be read. We're going to see the advice and the admonition that King David gave to the children of the children of Israel. If you'll go with me to Psalm 34. Psalm 34. If King David were here and could say anything to the young people, what would he say? Well, we're going to read that. Here's King David now taking over the sermon for a while. Verse 11, Psalm 34, verse 11. Come, you children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. So do you notice how King David sets this up? He says, if you will listen, young people, he says, I will teach you. And I will teach you the most important principle. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. I will teach you to love God, to want to listen to Him, and to know that to not to listen to Him will bring penalty of disobedience. Things that you've heard about from the time you were a young child, because you had the king's stories like that in Deuteronomy read to you. All right, Psalm 34 now, verse 12. So he asks, he begins now to appeal to the youth. He has their attention, and he says to them, would you like to enjoy life? And what young person would not? Yeah, I want to enjoy life. Do you want a long life and happiness? Yeah, of course. You see how he's appealing to them? He's got their attention. All right. Well, then keep from speaking evil and telling lies. Turn away from evil. Do good. Strive for peace with all your heart. The Lord watches over the righteous, and He listens to their cries. But He opposes those who do evil, so that when they die, they're soon forgotten. But verse 17, the righteous call to the Lord, and He listens. And He rescues them from all their troubles. That sounds pretty good to a young person living at David's time, and it sounds pretty good now. For the king to say, you know what? God will rescue you from all of your trouble. He listens to you when you cry. Verse 18. The Lord is near to those who are discouraged, and He saves those who have lost all hope. Good people suffer many troubles, but the Lord saves them from them all. The Lord preserves them completely. Not even one of their bones is broken. Evil will kill the wicked. And those who hate the righteous, they'll be punished. The Lord will save His people. Those who go to Him for protection, they'll be spared. You recognize any of those words? You should. It's from page 40 of our hymnal. Turn thou from evil, do what is good. The words are there. Most of you have been singing it all your life. Do you hear the words? Young people, do you hear King David talking to you when you sing that song? That's what it's from. That's what it's about. So to summarize what King David said, if King David was here, now back in the Bible study after a while, and he was going to be the first one speaking, here's what King David would say. Young people said, don't speak evil about anyone or anything. Don't tell lies. Don't try to deceive someone. You need to run away from evil. Don't even get close to it. Do good things for other people. Seek to be peaceful in all of your relationships and work at it with all your heart. Live righteously. That is, in obedience to the law of God. Young people, learn to pray. Talk to God every day and let Him talk to you. And young people, trust God to keep you away from trouble and protect you from danger. And King David would sit down and say, that's all I got to say right now. That sounds like pretty good advice, doesn't it? I suspect some of the things that our seniors are going to say to you young people today are going to be along those lines. But let me ask this. Did the children of Israel listen to King David? Nope. Most of them didn't listen to him. Sadly, throughout the years of the history of the Church of God, many of the teens did not listen to the wise advice and wise counsels of the seniors in their time either. One reason for that is because sometimes over the past years, our seniors may have neglected to some degree their responsibility to teach the children, as we're asked to do, to teach their children and our grandchildren diligently. We don't want to repeat those mistakes here. Not here in our local congregation today. We want our children here to listen to the wisdom of our elders. And we want our elderly to be given the opportunity to teach our children. And we begin that today. So then let's ask another question from the point of view of the teens and the young adults. Let me ask you this. Do you want to hear what our seniors have to say to you today? Do you want to hear it? Or would you rather, snacks over here, I'd rather just skip it. Just forget about it. Go about our normal routine today. Well, my hope, my expectation is that you eagerly anticipate and have looked forward to this very special Bible study in hearing what these folks have to say to you. Leviticus 19. We have some more instruction about the importance of listening to our seniors. Leviticus 19 and verse 32, I'm going to read this out of God's Word translation. It tells us, show respect to the elderly. Honor older people. In this way, you show respect for your God. I am the Lord. Or the New International Version says, stand up in the presence of the aged. Show respect for the elderly. Revere your God. I am the Lord. That's pretty impressive, isn't it? Do we do that? Do we have that kind of respect? By listening to and heeding the advice and counsel of the seniors, it says you're not only respecting them and showing them that you honor them, but it's also saying, by you doing that, you're showing honor and respect to God. And then he underlines that, saying, I am the Lord telling you that. That's pretty powerful. You know, God's not going to come down and talk to you personally right now, young people, like he did with some examples in the Bible. That's just not going to happen. But you can be sure that God will talk to you through the wisdom and the counsel of our elders here. And I'm speaking of our elderly and our seniors here. You know, we often talk about how we're a family, don't we? About how we're a church family here. I know that many of us are closer to the church family that we have here than we are to our physical family. Some of us may not even have much physical family. But we have brothers and sisters here. We call each other that. We say brethren. We don't usually say cistern, but brethren, we're family. We have fathers and mothers and grandfathers and grandmothers and children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Now, it's just natural, isn't it, that parents teach the children. That's just what happens. That's the natural way of things. Well, it should come natural here at church, too, shouldn't it? Should this be an unnatural thing that we're talking about? Our grandfathers here are very wise. And one of their greatest desires is to help you, our young people, to learn from their wisdom so that you can make wise choices, wise decisions in your life, and that you can learn from some mistakes that they have made and that you won't repeat those mistakes. You know, we've talked about a new program that the church is offering. We'll hear more about it later. It was introduced at Winter Family Weekend. I didn't get to go to the presentation that they had about it, but it was introduced, and you will be hearing about it. It's called Embark. We talked about that. Maybe some of you here did go to the presentation. But this is a program that the church is implementing for our teens and our young adults. And the seniors of the church are going to be very much involved in this new program. They're going to be able to provide mentoring and guidance, not only about spiritual matters, which will be included, but practical matters relating to your education to help preparing you to develop job skills, marketable job skills, personal development, apprenticeships, things like that. They're going to take an interest in seeing to it that you are successful young people. And the church is going to help you help us facilitate making that possible for you. I think that's a very good program to be involved in. Our seniors want our young people to succeed. We want you to succeed in every opportunity that you have, and have every opportunity. There's so much we have to offer. We're trying to provide that information to you now in a more organized and efficient manner through the Embark program. Let's go to Proverbs. The book of Proverbs is filled with instruction for all of us. As we know, there's special focus on instruction and advice to our young people. Chapter 4. Proverbs 4. We know Solomon was very wise. Probably going to talk about Solomon in the next sermon a little bit too. Learn from his wisdom. Proverbs 4 verse 1. Hear my children. Hear the instruction of a father. Give attention to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine. There's that term again. We've heard that before. I give you good doctrine. Good teaching. Do not forsake my law. That's a father to his child. That's also speaking of God's law as well. And that's the plea of the elderly to the young. You know, pay attention. Hear my instructions. You know, don't repeat the mistakes I've made in the past. I've made some. And our seniors can tell you, I know the pain involved in making wrong decisions. I don't want you to feel that pain. Let me tell you about it. And that's what they want to do. The elderly will plead with you to pay attention and receive understanding, because what they're going to provide to you is called sound doctrine. Good teaching. We need to pay attention to it and appreciate what's being given to us. Verse 10. I'm going to read this out of the Common English Version. In Proverbs 4, now verse 10. Listen, my son. Take in my speech. Then the years of your life will be many. I teach you the path of wisdom. I lead you in straight courses. When you walk, you won't be hindered. When you run, you won't stumble. Hold on to your instructions. Don't slack off. Protect it. Because it is your life. It is your life. Do you value it that much? Verse 14. Don't go on the way of the wicked. Don't walk on the path of evil people. Avoid it. Don't turn onto it. Stay off of it. Keep going. Now that's a theme we had at camp, wasn't it? Walking the narrow way. We still want to jump off onto the wide way because it looks so good. Verse 23. More than anything you guard, protect your mind. For life flows from it. Have nothing to do with a corrupt mouth. Keep devious lips far from you. Focus your eyes straight ahead. Keep your gaze on what is in front of you. Pretty good advice, isn't it? Does that sound great? So, asking our seniors who are going to participate, is that the kind of advice that you plan to give to our seniors or to our teens and to our young adults today? I hope so. I hope you've thought about what you might say to them given this opportunity that we have today. My hope is that you have thought deeply about what gems of wisdom you might impart to our precious young people here today, that we've actually taken it to God in prayer, that He would give you just the right words to say that will make a difference in the lives of these young people here. Young people, let's consider where you are in time right now. Now, I will say something, then I'll qualify it. It's very likely that you are the pivotal generation of all human history. I know, heard that before. I know. But maybe you are. What if you are the generation that spans the old world on into the new world, the world tomorrow? If that is you, what kind of responsibility does that put on you? Are you up to that challenge, that responsibility? If you are the ones who will live on over into the world tomorrow as our physical human leaders and as our role models, what is it that you will have to contribute to the society that's going to be established at that time? What are you bringing with you? Will you be able to talk to young people, and of course there will be young people, millions, will you be able to talk to them about the blessings and the benefits that you experienced as a teenager in God's church back in the 20-teens, doing things God's way? And then you can tell them stories of what it was like to do things the right way. Will you be able to share with them how you resisted the influence and pressures of Satan the devil to take you away? And at that time, they'll say, I don't understand Satan the devil. He's bound up then. They won't have that. You do. Or, will that be the way you are? Or will you be someone who in the 20-teens, someone who was weak and gave in to the pressures of life in the old world, and now you have to share your story of failure and encourage these young people in the world tomorrow, don't you even consider making the awful mistakes that I did. I blew it. I had the chance. My pastor even told me once during a sermon, and I didn't listen. I blew it. And I'm here today to tell you to listen to the people who are teaching you. You see, if you make right choices today, in this world, you're going to have incredible opportunities given to you in the next world, in the world tomorrow. But before that new world arrives, it's not here yet, but we are 1 year closer. Before it comes, we're all going to go through some pretty tough times, some dark days are ahead of us, and you're going to go through them too. You're going to have intense pressure put upon you to give up, to not follow God's law. And it will be hard. Now, we talked about that in a recent sermon, didn't we? You can't even get a job, you know, unless you agree, I'm going to work on Sabbath. You know, I've got to break the Sabbath. It's going to be very hard to make it through the years ahead. You have intense pressure. The deception of Satan the devil that you will experience will be very difficult for you to resist. I'm here to give you that warning now. It will be very difficult to resist the deception of Satan the devil to pull you away, to turn you away from this course. You have everything to gain if you resist, and you have everything to lose if you do not. And that's another reason why our seniors here are so anxious to help you, to guide you through this time that's ahead. In Joel chapter 1, verse 3, he's speaking of dire prophetic events that were about to befall Israel. The prophet Joel told children of their time a little bit about what was going to happen in their generation, which is a type of what's going to happen in your generation. Joel chapter 1 and verse 3, tell your children of it. And that's why we're speaking about this today. Let your children tell their children and their children yet another generation. So I've heard this from the time that I was 12. And here I am now teaching it lots of years later to 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds. Clearly, God has given His people the commission and the responsibility to hold unchanged His truth down through the ages by teaching it from generation to generation. By the way, that's the title of the sermon. He has given us that responsibility. Now, what specifically was Joel admonishing the elderly to warn, at that time, the younger generation about? Well, we see the answer in chapter 2 as Joel describes a very difficult time was coming, but he's also, this is a prophetic time. More especially, this is written for our time today. This is written for you, young people. Blow the trumpet in Zion. Joel chapter 2, verse 1. Sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord is coming. Now this is again for all of us. But our young people hear this too, because the day of the Lord is coming. For it is at hand. And today we believe it is at hand. A day of darkness, gloominess. A day of clouds and thick darkness. Like the morning clouds spread over the mountains, a people come, great and strong, the like of whom has never been seen, and nor will there ever be any such after them, even for many successive generations. A fire devours before them, behind them a flame burns. The land is like the Garden of Eden before them, but behind them a desolate wilderness, and surely nothing is going to escape them. Verse 10, the earth quakes before them, the heavens tremble, the sun and the moon grow dark, the stars diminish their brightness. The Lord gives voice before His army, for His camp is very great, for strong is the one who executes His word. For the day of the Lord is great and terrible. Who can endure it? The implication is that virtually no one will. But you can. You will. And what is God's advice? What is God's admonition to us? Given what is about to happen to shake the world, what does He say? Verse 12. Now, therefore, because of all of this, now, says the Lord, turn to Me with all your heart. Turn with fasting and weeping and mourning and rend your heart. Not your garments. You know, it has to be in your heart, remember? Return to the Lord your God, for He is gracious and merciful. He's slow to anger and of great kindness. What does a warning like that mean to us? Do we ignore it and think, well, that applies to someone else. I'm just fine. Again, I would address our younger people, young adults and teens. Are you considering that you might like to live the way of the world for just a while? I know that's a consideration. Been there, done that. Do you think that you just like to live free for a while? Free from those burdens, free from that restriction of going to that church. Free from living God's way of life. If you're considering that, I'm here to tell you that you are considering a very dangerous path. You're about to jump from the narrow way onto that wide path that leads to destruction and death. And our seniors here would give anything, if you're considering that or ever let that thought come to your mind, our seniors here would give anything to sit down with you and talk to you and say, don't even ever consider going that way. Don't ever think about it. Don't make that decision. My plan is to give them that opportunity beginning today. My hope is that you will listen. My belief is that you will. Why do I say that? Why am I so convinced that our young people are going to listen to the advice of our seniors beginning today? It's because of what's found in Malachi chapter 4. And verse 5. Sometimes we have to connect the dots, don't we? Malachi 4, verse 5. Behold, I send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. See, we read about the day of the Lord in Joel, didn't we? It's dreadful. But God says, I'm sending you a message before that time gets here, if you'll just listen to it. A messenger. Verse 6, he will turn the hearts of the fathers, of our elderly, of our grandfathers and grandmothers. He will turn their hearts to the children. And you know what, children? Your hearts will be turned to them. Lest I come and strike the earth with a curse. I believe this applies to our families and our church families today more than ever. And this says, before these events that we just read about there in Joel occur, there is going to be some type of reconciliation between the fathers and the children, between the elderly and the young, and we will be one family. It must happen because God will not strike this earth with the curse of utter destruction, which is what this means. So we have no other option available to us than to be part of the fulfillment of this prophecy. And so it begins. We have been told time and time again that we're to follow the example of Jesus Christ, right? We are to walk in His steps, right? Young people, are you walking in the steps of Jesus Christ? You know what they are? Do you read about it? We say, Jesus Christ is our role model. Is He yours? He is the role model for our teens, for our young adults, for our preteens. You know, this is pretty fascinating. The only story that we have available to us about Jesus Christ as a boy, one story, Luke chapter 2. Luke chapter 2. Wouldn't you have thought, young people, that we would have at least an entire book of the Bible, perhaps at least 10 chapters or so, all dedicated to what it was like for Jesus as an 8-year-old, as a 12-year-old, as 17. I mean, come on, 17-year-olds, it's hard. You know, why don't we have the examples of what it was like as a young person? And He gives us one. Luke 2, verse 43. When they had finished the days as they returned, the boy Jesus lingered behind in Jerusalem. Joseph, his mother didn't know it. So Jesus was a fairly independent young man, trustworthy, supposing him to have been in the company, in the greater household, remember? So they went a day's journey, and they sought him among their relatives and acquaintances, but they didn't find him. So they got to go all the way back to Jerusalem, seeking him. And so it was that after 3 days, after the journey back, so is it 4 days? I don't know, is it 3 days total? Doesn't matter. Through 4 days, and your kid's gone, mom and dad are pretty upset. After 3 days, they found him. Where? In the temple. He was at church, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking them questions. He wasn't doing the teaching yet. He was listening to the senior citizens of the congregation. And all who heard him were astonished at his understanding and what he said when they would turn around and ask him something. The only example we have of Jesus as a young boy, about 12 years old, he's at church listening to the wisdom of the elderly wise people around them and asking them questions. Are we going to follow that example today? Yes, we are. Let's summarize what we've covered today. We believe Jesus Christ is going to return and set up a government in the world tomorrow. We talk about the kingdom of God. We talk about us having a role, a part in that. And one of his primary goals is going to be restoring generation to generation to generation teaching. That method of education, that method of instruction to family. Family is going to mean a lot in the world tomorrow. So beginning with the first generation at his return, especially the physical human generation that we hope and believe will include many of you, he's going to spread and disseminate the knowledge of his truth and God's way of life throughout the world, beginning with the generation that lives on over into that new world. Now, yeah, spirit beings teach, but there's a lot for physical human beings, an example for them to set, a teaching they will do. It is this generation-to-generation system of teaching that will finally help mold the hearts and minds of people throughout all the thousand-year period, throughout all the millennium, mold them into a society of Christians, of a people who have a godly culture, people who live God's way of life, who have godly values, people who are successful in their lives and their careers. Today, we as parents, grandparents, and the senior citizens of our congregations, we have a profound calling and responsibility resting on our shoulders. Not only have we been called to help preach the gospel to the world, you know, that's certainly part of our calling, isn't it? You know, we do that in the way that we can. But the second half of our commission is preparing a people, teaching a people. That includes our children, a generation of sons and daughters who have learned to fear God, to be ready to then physically assist in any way they can under Jesus Christ, under the ruling Sons of God team, in ushering in this coming world ruling government. They have a part in that. And I think we always need to prepare at young people, we need to prepare as if we are that generation who will be the ones that usher in this new world tomorrow. Now, we believe the law of God is summed up in the Ten Commandments. Again, I'm summarizing. The fifth commandment strikes right at the heart of the problem that the elderly sometimes face. You know, the fifth commandment, honor your father and mother. What is the attitude of the younger generation today towards the older generation? Again, the fifth commandment requires us, honor your father and your mother. It goes on from there. Now, I believe that that extends in principle, of course, not only to your father and your mother, but to your grandfather and grandmothers, and if you're so privileged, your great-grandparents. Honor. That's where solving the problems of society has to begin, with a change of attitude that there is honor to the parents and the grandparents. So the younger generations among us now begin to show more genuine honor, more respect. I fear sometimes our younger folks can get way too caught up in things. They get caught up in technology. If you go to the mall, where the closest mall is, you start walking in the middle of the mall, you're going to see young people with their gadgets doing, and that's all over. Everywhere you go. You go into a restaurant, and the booth next to you, if that has young people, what do you see pulled out? Their smartphones and their... Perhaps the older generations were guilty of that too, with the technology of their day. I tried to think back of what technology was when I was like 15. I'm not sure there was any. We hadn't heard of computers yet. I do remember Pac-Man coming out, and Atari. And I remember having a computer, and you had these floppy disks in it, just these like piece of cardboard you had to insert in. I do remember those. And I think the time that we spent on our computers was figuring out how to make it work, because it crashed about every 15 minutes. And to try to get something on the internet, when the internet finally did, occur, you'd watch it downloading, you'd read. To get to one website might take, about a half an hour for it to download to a website? We've come a long way in 10 years. There's 50 years. All right. We've got to be careful about that, though, making absolutely sure that as much as we enjoy those things, and they do benefit us to a degree, that we don't overuse them. Could it be we're far too occupied with this texting and social media and being connected with friends? I'm connected with my friends, through the social media. That we lose that connection, the real connection, with our family, with our extended family. Spending quality time with those you love, doing quality things together. The Bible does show us how our elders should be respected. We've covered some of those, how they are to occupy a place in society in God's organized way. It says, gray hair is to be regarded as a crown of glory. That was Proverbs 16:31. We read that young people were to rise up in the presence of the aged. I'm not saying you got to stand up when someone walks past you, but if you're in a room and an elderly walks into your room, it's the only one there, would you stand up out of respect? It says to do that. Their advice and counsel is to be sought after, is to be heeded when it's given to you. The aged are to be the wisest members of society. They are to teach the young the right way to live. That was more the way it was in the old days. That's the example that we find. As we've looked at a few examples in the Bible, that's the way it was then. Should we not try as best as we can to follow principles like this that are found in the Word of God? Don't we say that we live by the Word of God? Is that really being old-fashioned? Today, everything is kind of backwards. The older generation dependent on the younger generations. But God's way is for the younger generation to be dependent on the elderly of society for their wisdom, for their guidance. A strong, stable, extended family anchored to a strong and stable home. That's being destroyed today. Perhaps has been destroyed. The basis of a stable society is a strong, extended family anchored to the family home. Where is that today? Our families are under attack. And young people, we need family. We need our church family. As we've said, respecting, heeding the wisdom of the aged makes it possible to avoid mistakes if you believe the things that they will tell you. When Paul repeated the fifth commandment there in Ephesians 6, he said to honor your father and mother, but he also said that it may be well with you. We want it to be well with you, young people, very much. what we're talking about today, this is how you do it. Jesus Christ is going to return to this earth. He's going to save this generation from itself, from utter destruction. He will set up the government of God. Society will be conformed to the ways that we're talking about today. It will be the way that produces respect and harmony among people. Technology that I talked about, don't get me wrong on that. Technology will benefit family life, not destroy it. Because in God's society, God will be in control of the technology, not, society controlled by technology. God will do that. Now, yes, I believe there's going to be technology, awesome technology in the world tomorrow. I believe there's things coming in the world tomorrow we can't imagine. Where did this come from in the first place? Who invented technology? Right? I believe it was Jesus Christ. He loves technology. We want to help you young people prepare for that wonderful new world that's coming. An opportunity you have for such an amazing future. If you just want to reach out, grab it, take hold of it. Don't let it go. Don't let it slip away from you. Think of the Feast of Tabernacles once in a while. Remember back and the meaning of the feast. Think back of scriptures. Here's one, Zechariah chapter 8, describing the time that's just ahead of us. It talks about what we're talking about today. Zechariah 8 and verse 4 says, "Old men and old women shall sit again in the streets of Jerusalem, each one with his staff in his hand, because of great age, and the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the street." That's a picture of the young and old brought together in the neighborhood. A wonderful picture of the world tomorrow. Should we not be living that way now? In our church family, in our world today, and in our physical families as best as we can. Don't we need to bridge the generation gap? That's something that was told 50 years ago. We needed to bridge the generation gap. How much more is that true today? So teens, I hope you agree with what we've covered today. I hope you take advantage of it. If you think that our elderly senior citizens here who attend church with you really have nothing to offer you, nothing that would benefit you, then you're wrong. Because they do. And my belief is that our seniors here have longed to be able to have an opportunity to talk to you, to teach you, to impress upon your young minds how valuable of a gift God has given you to be here. And my hope is that each one of our seniors will cherish this opportunity that you're being given today to talk with you openly in the Bible study after services today. Because time is marching on. 2015. Some of the senior citizens here today, or others who are part of our congregation who might not have been able to be here today, frankly, don't have all that much time left. Because the calendar is going to keep turning. Old age, disease, will take their toll. And some of the folks that you see sitting here among us today won't be here. And we'll miss them. Just like I miss the elderly men and women who taught me so much when I was 15 years old. But today, it's not too late for you to listen to them and to learn from them because they're here. It's not too late for them to be able to sit down and talk with you, to get to know you, to love you, teenagers and preteens, because here they are, still sitting here with us, ready and anxious to share with you some of their most treasured memories and some of the values of life. And they want you to listen. They want to encourage you, to motivate you, to build you up, to help you to have a better relationship with God, like they have learned to do. We're going to close with Job chapter 12. Job chapter 12, verse 12. It says, "Wisdom is with aged men, and with length of days is understanding. With him are wisdom and strength. He has counsel and understanding." I'm going to read that again because some of you were turning to it. It says, "Wisdom is with aged men, and with length of days understanding." So the aged have wisdom and understanding and strength, it says. He has counsel and understanding. Now that applies to our aged women as well. So young people, that's what our seniors here have to offer you. They're here to help you have understanding, wisdom, and strength. They have so much to offer you. And seniors, they have so much to learn from you as we begin today.